Hi, my name is Rick Brazza. Welcome to another lesson in creative coding for Windows 8 in JavaScript using the Processing.js libraries. In this lesson, we'll be looking at collision. Now, we've already been doing collision since the very first lesson with bouncing off of walls. But what happens when you have two elements that might be bouncing off each other, especially if they're moving in different directions? How do you transfer all that? Well, the good news is that we'll be able to do it in one function. We'll be able to go through the concepts easily. Compared to the sine and cosine math, this is a lot easier. But we will be looking at something such as velocities and normals. And jumping right into code, you'll see that the framework looks very, very similar. This builds up on most of the lessons that we've done already. So this framework should be very simple, not that much code, but we'll have one killer function, which will be the check balls collision. And that's where we'll talk about this particular case. So first, let's set up our sketch to get a lot of balls flying around on the stage. Here's our normal setup as we've done, our width and height. We're setting it up, setting the stage, blacking it out. Then we have a draw command. So as usual, we're going to create a class for whatever visual element we want to use. In this case, we'll create a ball class. As always, we've been giving it an x and y property. We're going to give them a velocity x and a velocity y because we're going to want these to be moving around the stage. We're also going to give them a radius of 5 pixels. And as is a good habit, every class is going to take care of its own rendering. So every ball will have its own render function, which we will call from the draw loop. And when we tell the ball to render, again, no new code here, it's going to draw an ellipse. This dot x, this dot y. And then at the full size we want. It's radius times 2 so that it's the entire width. Radius times 2. Good. So that's all it takes for our ball class. This should look very familiar. We've been seeing the exact same code in most of our other lessons. Simple rendering. Of course, at the very top, we're going to create a simple array to hold this. We're going to have a total balls. In this case, we'll start off with 16. We're going to create an array of ball called balls equals new ball array of total balls. That should look very familiar by now as well. Okay, in setup, let's go ahead and since we're only going to use one color for this sketch, I'm going to define it once. We'll draw everything red. And let's set up our ball array. While I is equal to 0, or starting off I equal to 0, while I is less than total balls, I plus plus. Typing this code should by now, after the lesson, start feeling very familiar to you. And really, a lot of these creative sketches start the same way. We create a temporary ball instance. We're going to give it a random x, basically saying pick a random number from 0 to width. That's your x. Pick a random number from 0 to height, that'll be your y. And let's give it a random velocity. We're going to want to give it from negative 5 to positive 5. So we're going to double. So that's a range of 10. So from 0 to 10, and then subtracting the range we want. Again, we wanted a negative to positive 5. So doubling the range, and then subtracting the range. And finally, we're going to pop it into the array. Come over here. I'm going to increase the radius a little bit to maybe 15 for now. Let's make it 20. Inside of our draw loop, We are going to do the code we've normally done. We're going to loop through all of these. Int I equals 0 while I is less than total balls. I plus plus. And we will say, balls I dot x is plus equal to balls I dot vx. We will be adding the velocity of every ball to their x and y. And then we would render them. Now if we just run this right now, all the balls are going to fly off in different directions off the stage because we're not doing any collision detection yet. So we're going to make sure we do that. But first let's make sure we don't have any code in our or any bugs in our code. So let me run this locally. Balls should appear and fly off the stage. Sure enough, there they go. Good. Let's add some wall. Let's check for wall collision first. Now inside of our draw loop, we have it all here. So just before we render, we're going to create a check wall collision. It's going to receive a ball reference. And we're going to call it right here, check wall collision, passing in whatever current ball we're looping through. So we're calling it here, and here we're going to define the function. Again, this math isn't anything we haven't already seen. We're just pulling it out into its own function. And if you recall, we were able to take some shortcuts. We're going to talk about it a little bit more now this time. We could say, now it's coming in and we're calling it locally just ball, so let's go ahead and use that. If ball.x is less than ball.radius, the reason I said radius other than 0 is because the very first time we did this, we weren't checking on the radius of the balls. If you run back that first sketch, you'll notice that the ball goes all the way from its center point, goes into the wall. So it actually has always been going past the radius into the wall, because when it was at 0 is when we were bouncing it. We want this one to look a lot better. So it's whenever the farthest radius of it hits the wall, that's enough for us to start bouncing out. So instead of saying if when the x is less than 0, we'll say when it's less than your radius, when your radius is touching the wall, we would do certain things. We would say your x, basically we're saying bounce back. I'll explain that in a moment. And then most importantly, your velocity x is being times equal to negative 1. Now, we end up doing the same thing for all four of the walls, right? This is the left wall, for the right wall, for the top one. We were doing this before because we're saying if for some reason you're moving very, very quickly, and before this particular draw cycle, before this check, you're maybe 5 pixels away, but you're moving so quickly that when I'm checking, you actually are going into the wall. You're not actually touching right at the wall. You're actually going into it. First, you should bounce back to where your limit should have been. And now let's recalculate the x. Since the walls are perpendicular, right? We're going up and down or left and bottom. It's easier thinking on the floor. Let's see how this happens for all four of our walls. So I'm going to literally copy and paste and simply change the values. When the x is greater than our width minus ball radius, our x would be equal to, so bounce back, our width minus ball radius. If you happen to be greater than it, put yourself right in it so visually it doesn't look like you're cheating anymore. And then toggle our x velocity. We don't worry about the y velocities here because the walls were perpendicular. It was always kind of doing a perfect bounce this way. For our y velocities, for our y position and velocities, it was the exact same thing. When our y is less than ball radius, our y is equal to ball radius, and our velocity y was toggled. When our y was greater than our height, but now we're being exact, so we're being our height minus ball radius, then our ball y is now equal to our height minus ball radius, and we're inverting the y. going back to the very first code we wrote in the series of sketches, we're now looking at it again, hopefully with a little bit more code and a little bit more math under our belts. Let's run this, and it should now have all the balls bouncing and being constrained to our play area. Make sure everything looks right so far. Let's give it a test. There we go. This is what we've seen before. We have 16 balls. They're all floating around fixed velocities. As it approaches a wall, it bounces straight back. Now, we might want to ask ourselves why, when we get to this limit, are we not worrying about any change in y, right? If I'm hitting the floor, if I'm bouncing down, why do we only care about the change in the y velocity and not in the x velocity? This comes down to something that's called a normal or a surface normal. You'll get into this a lot if you start working with 3D. But whenever you have a face, right, your normal is the line that kind of points perpendicular straight out of that face. When we're dealing in 2D, the floor in this case that we'll be looking at, it has a normal that's 100% in line with the y-axis. In other words, it's not angled in any way. If our floor was angled, you'd have to start calculating the normal. You'd have to figure out how much of this normal is pointing in the y-axis and then invert your y-velocity by that much, and how much is kind of leaning toward the x-axis. Figure out how much of that is, and then we would be affecting the x velocities if you're bouncing off of an angled platform. Since all of our walls that we've been doing have been straight, and our normals have either been 100% x aligned or 100% y aligned, we've been cheating and basically been saying times negative 1. But as soon as that normal gets crooked in any way, we would have to start doing a little bit more math, first calculating the normal, applying how much of that y, how much of that normal affects the y force that we need to invert, how much of it affects the x force that we need to invert, and then tweak both the x and y. It sounds a little bit more confusing. Good news is that when we're just dealing with perpendicular walls, we don't have to worry about it. But now that we're going to be dealing with inter-ball collision, that's what the step's going to be. At a high level, though, that's what it is. What's the normal? What are the normals of these two objects that we're dealing with? Calculate the x and y factors and then apply them. It sounds more complicated when you say it out loud. When you start seeing the code, it'll make a little bit more sense. We're also going to increase the size of these to make them a little bit more visible. There you go. That looks a little bit better. Okay. So let's get down to our collision code. Our draw command, we kind of wrap up all of this check wall math in its own function here. That makes our draw command a lot easier to read. When I'm reading this, it's a lot easier because it's a lot smaller. So, okay, well, we're updating their velocities kind of blindly, updating their position based on velocity. Then we're checking constraints for wall collision. Then we're drawing them. What we're going to do right now is, once we've drawn them, we're going to check for collisions for the next time around. Because this is getting called so quickly, we're able to do some things, you know, we're able to do some sneaks like this, where at any given time we might draw, but since it'll only be like 1/60th of a second that they're overlapping, nobody will really notice it. So once we're doing all of our draw commands, let's now take the extra step of checking in between ball collisions. So I'm going to create a function here called check ball collisions. And notice I'm not going to pass a parameter to it, because this function is going to have to loop through all the balls and not do it one at a time. So I'm also not going to put it inside of my for loop, because this is dealing with every ball individually. My check ball collisions is going to have to take care of its own loops. So after that's done, I'm going to here call check ball collisions. I could have done it before my for loop or after my for loop. At this point, it kind of doesn't matter. So I'm calling it here. So this is it. This is where all of the collision magic is going to take place. Let's start writing it down. going to be for int I equals 0. While I is less than total balls, I plus plus. We're actually going to have to loop this twice because this is what's going on for every one of those balls. There are 16 balls on the stage, as according to our sketch right now. Every one of those balls, I'm going to check the first one, and then starting on this guy with all the balls kind of moving forward, check and see, is he hitting every one? Once that happens, we're basically going to say go to the next guy in the list and for check his remainder. He doesn't have to check backward because that guy had already checked him forward, right? So we have this collection of 16 balls. The first guy checks all of them. The second guy checks the rest. The third guy checks the rest relative to him, and on and on and on. And this creates this kind of nesting of loops. So we're going to need two loops for this. This is the first loop that's basically saying make sure every ball has at least had its turn to check. Our next loop is going to look like this. For int j is equal to, here we're starting at whatever I is, I plus 1. While j is less than total balls, and then we increment j. You might not have seen a for loop like this. It's doing exactly what we said. I is going to be going from 0 to 16 without a doubt. The first time this passes, I is going to be equal to 0, j is going to be equal to 1, which makes sense. The very first guy doesn't have to check and see if he's hitting himself, of course. He'll have to check and see if he's hitting the next guy. But once this first guy has run all his tests and I becomes 1, j gets to start at 2 because he's moving down, always looking toward the end of the array. You never have to look backward because the people before you have already checked to see if they've collided with you. Once we have these two balls, and we can start referencing in the illustration here, right? And we'll start referencing to this. We'll go to full screen in a minute. Let's start getting some of the math. Let's look at it up here. So we have this reference to ball I, right? This is the first ball. Now it's going to go through and it's going to be checking if it's colliding with any other balls. Most of the time, we're going to have to calculate what's the distance between these two balls. The way you calculate a distance is you say if this ball is at this x and y, and this ball is at this x and y, we basically need to figure out how far away are they. In order to figure out how far away they are, we have to say how far away are their x's, right? So if this guy is at an x right here and this guy's at an x right here, then this line is the delta of our x, the difference of our x. How far away are their y values? This here would be their y values. Once we've formed a triangle, it's easy to calculate how far away they are, right? As if you recall from math, right, this is a squared plus b squared equals c squared, Pythagorean theorem, we've all known it. This is what it looks like. If this is a, so it'd be dx times dx plus dy times dy, will give us this distance. That's what we're going to do in code right now. So let's jump over to code and see at least what that first part looks like. So here we are back in code, looking in our function. We're going to say float the distance between our two the two balls that are being checked is balls j, its value, minus balls I, its x value. And it's the exact same thing for the delta along the y-axis. Right? This gives us the dx and the dy of what we just finished checking. We'd calculate the distance then by saying the square root of, and then we go dx times dx plus dy times dy. Right? That right there is the Pythagorean theorem. We have 2 points. We calculate their distance in x, their distance in y, will allow us to figure out what the absolute distance is, no matter where these 2 points are on the screen. What we need to do, though, is to see if the distance between them, let's look at what we're trying to solve. If the distance between them is less than both of their radius, right? This guy's a radius this big, and this guy's a radius that big. If the distance between them is less than both of their radii put together, then we know that they have to be overlapping because we're dealing with circles. If the distance is greater than their two radii, then we know that there's a big gap between them somehow or another. But as soon as that distance is less than the radius of this guy plus the radius of this guy, they have to be overlapping if they're circles. So let's go ahead and solve for that. We'd say, let's move up one more space. If the distance is less than balls j dot radius plus balls I dot radius, wrap this up like this. Okay, so here's the Pythagorean theorem. And now that we have that, this will let us know if the two balls are colliding. If they're not colliding, let's not worry about it, right? We get to just go ahead. The four loops will continue to play out. It'll do its own thing, and then this will check the next guy. And then once all of the people after him has been checked, it'll loop to the pointer to the next person in line, right? So this is now what we care about. At this point, we can say for sure, you know, the circles overlap. So now let's start dealing with the reactions. We were talking about that normal. Okay. So now it's kind of, let's pop back out. This normal x and normal y, this is what's going on. This distance, right? Let's think about this, what was happening if this was a ball falling straight down to the ground. Since this normal would have been straight up, right? If you have a ball and the ball was falling straight down and the normal of the floor is pointing straight up, there's no triangle between these two, right? Because here's the center and the triangle. The only offset along the normal is the y, right? It doesn't matter about the x. But since this guy is now angled, we have to take into account. It now becomes a percentage. So based on the triangle, if these guys were overlapping each other more like this, right? If the balls were like this, and this guy was flying up, and this guy was flying down, and they had no change in x and y, then yes, the normal here would be exactly as if it was a floor. But since these guys are in different positions, all of a sudden, to calculate the bounces, it's the angle of the distance. So in your head, you can think of it's as if the floor was like this and they're bouncing this way. So in order to do that, you have to start using percentages. How much of this slant is affected along the x-axis, and how much is affected along the y-axis? That's what these lines of code are doing right here. The normal along the x, how much of it? Well, what's the distance along their x divided by the total distance? And on the y, the distance along the y? Again, plugging these in our thought experiment, if we were just bouncing along the floor, there's zero difference between the floor and the ball. So our normal x would be all the way down to zero. It's all along the same axis. So our normal y would be all the way up to one, because the distance is literally the distance between the ball's y and the floor bottom. So all the math that we're doing works no matter the angle that's happening, even if it's something that we could have done by simply doing minus negative 1. This is the robust solution to what we're doing. It always requires calculating the normals. Once we have these two guys, calculating the midpoint is pretty straightforward. It's we're adding the two values between these balls and dividing it in half. We're basically getting the midpoint here among our distance line. Right. Here's the midpoint we're going to be trying to calculate. So we're adding the x position and the y position, I mean the x positions of the two balls, dividing it in half. That's going to get us the middle. That's going to get us the middle of this dx. And then we're going to also calculate the midpoint along the y, and that will be as well the y position of the two balls. Once we have these guys, once we've calculated the normal and we have the midpoint, the first thing we have to do is basically bounce back. Balls I calculate the normals, find the midpoint. First, we want to bounce back. Balls I x is equal to the midpoint x minus our balls I radius times the normal x. So bounce back in the x direction however much that normal is influencing the total amount of force. And it's the same thing for the y-axis, the radius times the amount of pressure along the y-axis the normal is exerting. We would do this for both balls, so it's both x and the J balls. Okay, once we're bouncing them back, let's also start calculating some force in here. First, let's type out the code and then we can explain it. Because all we've done so far, is kind of based on their positions, we're finding their midpoint and pushing them back along their distance line. But each one of these balls might have been traveling at different velocities in different directions. We don't know until we draw it what velocity, what the vx of this particular ball was, right? This ball might have been traveling this way. So it would have had a vx, you know, of negative and a vy this way. This ball might have been traveling this way. So we need to calculate what the velocities are. All we've done so far is find their midpoint, find the normals, and start adjusting along the normals. The last step we have to do is now take that normal and smush their two velocities together and figure out how to distribute it so we know what the bounce back is. When it's perpendicular, it was easy. The bounce back was just negative 1, right? Now that we have the normals calculated, we're going to go through and tweak it with their velocity. So let's go ahead and do that. So we're creating this variable called d vector. And now we're taking into account the x bounce of the velocity. I'm splitting it into two lines. You could have done this in one line. But now we're going to take into account the y aspects of their velocity. Right. Whatever the difference is in their x velocities times however much we care about it, whatever the distance, the difference is on their y velocities, and then times however much we care about it. At this point, it's kind of giving us an accumulated, here's the amount of force from this vector. I'll start saying the difference now with sines, cosines, and a tan 2s, you end up doing it so much that a lot of times you don't have to look it up. A lot of things when you're dealing with vectors and velocities and forces, don't feel bad if you have to look it up. I still keep writing it down and looking it up, and every time I have to do it, because these types of things you don't do all the time, but it's always good to have at least one reference under your belt. So once we tweak the vectors times the normals on the DVX, we're now down to the last part. Now let's apply it. So once we've calculated the bounce back, okay, this is what's just finished happening. We took into account the velocities. We figured out if these two velocities hit each other, what's the resulting, you know, what's the reaction? Whatever the reaction is, and think about it, if they're coming this way, if they hit each other, right? Or if they're hitting each other this way, and they're both the same mass moving at the same speed, the reaction would actually be zero because they'd wipe each other out, right? But if you're at an angle, you're basically saying if we're mashing these two velocities together, kind of, what's the reaction? And whatever the reaction is, one of the balls is going to, or one of these circles will have that reaction subtracted to it. The other circle would have the reaction added to it because they would both react differently based on the reaction. So that's it for the math here. And again, the purpose of this and the code that's being on here is to get it at least once, work with it in your head, but then come back and feel free to copy and paste and to kind of work through this code to understand, at least being able to repurpose it in different environments. But if we've typed everything in correctly, we have our now new and improved check ball collisions function. Let's run it and see if it works. All right, that looks a little spazzed out. Let's switch over to code and see what's going on. Here, hold on. Okay, here we are. So first off, on the bounce back, this right here, I was subtracting from both I and J. And just as we did when we inverted the velocities over here, one of the balls is subtracted while the other one gets added. I had an error in my code right here. I was subtracting the bounce back from both of them. So the J balls needs to be added instead of subtracted. There's one other mistake right up here. And this is also kind of based on the variables. I probably shouldn't have used I and J because it was hard to spot something like this. This should be an I and it's a J. So there we go. And at this point, if we go ahead and check it out now, hopefully it should work. Good. So at this point, we're seeing that we have multiple circle detection collision working no matter what the velocity, no matter what the direction is of the circles. We're also seeing that it has a clean collision wall that's respecting their radius. Now at a certain point, if we start overloading the system a lot more, we'd probably be able to start seeing some mistakes in our math. Let's say we made this to 60 balls. Let's make the radius a little bit smaller, see what it looks like. Oh, that's pretty cool. It's still decent. Let's pop this up to 100. Nice, not bad. Still pretty performant. And of course, if you wanted to add a little bit more visual style, this is kind of like solar flare in Photoshop, where you can definitely use it too much. But let's see what happened if we did the kind of did a little black wash. Now after that, we'll have to reset our fill to red so that we could draw the draw all the circles with the same red color. So instead of blacking it out, let's kind of slowly black out. Let's just check and see what happens. 100 circles. Oh, cool. That's kind of neat. So we'll leave it at that. Keep tweaking some of the numbers, playing things around. What happens when the balls all have different radii? Well, our code should be robust enough to handle that because it's checking the radius of those two. So tweak your setup, try adding different radius. If you got this far and this kind of made sense to you, if you want to push a little bit further, you can start looking into mass. Now, by adding mass, it would tweak a little bit of our math, but the framework is still basically there. Right now, all of these are bouncing back equally, but not only if you're increasing the radius, that also increases the mass, right? Maybe if you have a bigger circle, it moves slower, but it definitely doesn't move as quickly back as the other ones. But if you're kind of just barely hanging on to the math, it's okay. Feel definitely proud. We covered a lot of territory today. And you have a good chunk of a circular collision code that you can use on all of your other projects. So hope you got something out of this lesson. And of course, we still have a couple more coming down. So stay tuned for those. Thanks again, everybody.